I'm wanting to do is returning to the book Realizing Genjo Koan. And for the most part, what I'm going to be doing is reading from the text and commenting on it. I'll be interested to see what a number of you think in terms of what we're covering, because I had to smile in reading this section in Realizing Genjo Koan, because I was smiling at, I can still, because it's not too far in the past, can still realize how I understood, how my mind took what he is saying, and not quite misunderstood what he was saying, but I would like to think that I'm understanding it in a much fuller way now. But it was one of those things where, as most of you know, I what tend to be one of these types that has an overdeveloped thinker, and in reading this section, part of the smiling I was doing was it's like, ah, gotcha. It's like the thinking mind in the past got going again. And Shohaku Okamura and Great Master Dogen are pointing so clearly and helping us so clearly in trying to go beyond that. So in one of the sections of the Genjo Koan, which is one of the chapters in the Shobogenzo that Great Master Dogen wrote back in the mid-1200s, he has this statement where he says, "When one seeks the Dharma, one strays far from the boundary of the Dharma. When the Dharma is correctly transmitted to the self, one is immediately an original person." So when one first seeks the Dharma, my sense is that the word Dharma that he's using here, he's using in the context of when one first seeks to understand the truth, when one first seeks to find reality, what's really going on. So he says, when one first seeks it, one actually strays far from the boundary of the truth or of reality. So Shohaku Okamura continues where he says, here in this section that I just read, Dogen discusses delusion and enlightenment in relation to the search for truth within our practice. In this first sentence, he refers to our motivation in beginning practice. The search for truth, for the Dharma, or for a spiritual path almost always begins as the desire to solve some problem or answer some life question. And I think for all of us, whether we're newish to the practice or some way along in the practice, we can all identify with it. It all brings up, okay, why exactly, were we drawn to some sort of spiritual practice? What was going on for us when we started looking? And he continues by saying, we may feel a sense of lack in our lives. Some personal crisis may prompt us to question our way of life. Aging, sickness, the death of others, personal conflicts, loss of wealth or status, or poor judgment can cause us much suffering. One may come to feel that one's lifestyle is unhealthy, and the wish to abandon a materialistic approach to life may prompt a search for some spiritual path. And he says, I think most of us begin to practice in an attempt to fill an empty place in our lives or to recover from an unhealthy way of living. In Buddhism, this aspiration to awaken is called bodhicitta, which gets translated variously. Bodhicitta is a Sanskrit word, And Bodhi, word for Buddha, or awakening. Citta is referring to the heart. And as I understand it, the word citta, the heart, refers to that deepest heart of our being. So it's often translated into English as the Bodhi mind, or Bodhi heart, Buddha heart, the awakening mind, or the way-seeking mind. So we have this aspiration to find the truth. You know, we have this motivation to find the truth. And he asks us, but isn't this aspiration another kind of desire, another kind of wanting? And he assures us that yes, it is. He says the object of desire, in this case enlightenment or the truth, it's different from our usual ones or our other ones, but it is still an object of desire. When a person tires of seeking material fulfillment, she may turn the focus of her life to seeking spiritual peace or relief. In Buddhism, we call this the search for liberation, for enlightenment, or nirvana. And he goes on to say it's really important to realize that without this desire to change our lives, there isn't any motivation for us to, you know, to seek a spiritual path. So quite clearly, there's a very fundamentally important aspect to that motivation. I remember I had a meditation group down in Arcata, California, and I can't quite remember the context of the group discussion that was going on, but at one point I said, you know, I have an example for all of you. And I got very animated, and I said very passionately and, you know, in a very motivated way, I said, well, it's just like saying, any one of us blurting out and saying, I want to become a doctor, or, you know, you fill the blank in, I want to become a space engineer or something like that. And then he just kind of paused. And I was like, okay, well, that's a good start. And now it's like, well, what do you have to do for that to actually be actualized? And I think that's the thing that the Shohaku Okamura and Great Master Dogen are trying to point to in terms of us clarifying. The motivation, the aspiration, the desire, that seed of it, definitely good. And what next? So according to Dogen, when we first seek the Dharma, we move far from the boundary of the Dharma. This is because our aspiration, and I'll read the words he's using, this is because our aspiration still involves a kind of hunting mind. We feel our lives are lacking something, so we pursue what we think we are missing. Sense of lack that gets switched around to pursuing something, trying to find something. So here's the really critical thing, the real crucial thing. So the target is different. He's still using his hunting metaphor, which on the side I don't like, but anyway. It's his words. So the target is different, the goal is different, but the process happening in the mind is the same process that happens when we are hungry and searching for food, or when we are poor and searching for money, when we don't know something and we want to learn something new. And this may be why I really like this particular passage, because continues by saying, it is this attitude that Dogen refers to when he writes, Conveying oneself toward all things to carry out practice enlightenment is delusion. So this whole thing about conveying oneself, we have our mind and we engage in this process, this mental process. Whether it's food or money or knowledge or even enlightenment, we're still using this process of the mind. And that's what Dogen's referring to about conveying ourselves towards all things. That's usually our normal mode of going about living, is that we get it going, but it's kind of like within 30 seconds of waking up, it's already going full speed. You know, that way we use our minds. So in other words, the more a person practices with an agenda or a goal, the more she moves away from the boundary of the Dharma. Practicing with an agenda or a goal, that's just stationing ourselves right within the midst of our ordinary everyday mind and the way it works. And so by doing that, we are far from the boundary of the Dharma. So what he's really doing is, Great Master Dogen, he's really trying to clarify for us that the Dharma, the truth, reality, is something other than just carrying on with the ordinary workings of our mind and engaging in our lives through that ordinary everyday working of our minds. It's something completely different than that, completely other than that. And if you look at that from the point of view of him simply factually, you know, presenting this factual information, he's just clarifying for us that to find the Dharma, the workings of everyday ordinary mind aren't gonna do it. Just really, really valuable information. And those of us who are here today are at least to some degree or another kind of realizing that Great Master Dogen might be right about this. Shohaku Okamura goes on to talk about something I think is really, really significant for all of us, regardless of how long we've been at a practice. But it touches on something that's particularly valuable or helpful for those of you who are kind of more in your earlier years of doing this. He says that in the early part of meditation practice, people often have some sort of special experience that makes them feel fantastic. I've had a number of discussions, they just kind of spontaneously came up in meditation groups I was leading, and with people who had been at the practice, you know, for some time, and they were talking about, boy, back in the early days of practice, things seemed to be just a lot more exciting. You know, a lot more stuff kind of came up, spiritual or otherwise. And it's like, oh, we're making progress here. Something's really going on. Not to say that progress wasn't being made, or not to say that something wasn't going on. But what's really interesting is that, you know, he continues here saying that when the good feelings wear off, they practice hard to recreate the special experience. And I guess maybe another way of saying that is that, okay, I started doing this spiritual practice, some really fantastic stuff happened, I'll keep doing it, but with the hopes that some more good stuff will happen. And so I think that's what he's implying by, you know, practicing hard to recreate the special experience. But then he says, but usually to no avail. Soon frustration and disappointment set in, and eventually fatigue and boredom may even cause the person to quit practicing. And I think what he's talking about here is something that those of us who've been doing this for some years, we've all experienced what he's talking about. We've all experienced, what am I doing wrong? You know, being frustrated about the practice. Or it may get very tedious, or it may start feeling like work. or we can really go through a period of, you know, boredom and fatigue. I think I've touched on this before, but way back in the early days of Christian monasticism, you know, the Desert Fathers, the tradition of, you know, way back, when was that? Kind of in the transition from BC to AD, or, you know, around the year zero, give or take 100 years or so, there was a long-standing tradition of contemplatives going out into the desert, where they would have monastic communities and so on. And they actually had a term called exedi, a Latin term for what would inevitably happen for pretty much everybody is the honeymoon period. Once that was over, after a number of years, give or take, things would just start getting really, really dry. And that was a really crucial point, you know. How's the person gonna fare? Are they gonna keep persisting? Or, as Shohaku Okamura says, are they gonna actually quit practicing? So everything that I've just said in the last little while, Shohaku Okamura says, this is conveying oneself toward all things. This is all of the things, boredom, fatigue, dryness, etc., things not being exciting, all of that is still coming at it from our average, ordinary mental perspective of things. And what the mind is doing is it's trying to catch the greatest goal of all, i.e. enlightenment. But it's still within the workings of our everyday mind. And so he very quite rightly asks, he says, well, so what can we do in this situation? Because our desire to attain enlightenment, liberation, or awakening, because of that, we practice. And without such desire, it's very difficult to find the motivation to realize it. And then he says, which I was already touching on, is that often this problem becomes apparent after many years of diligent practice. When we discover that our very aspiration to attain enlightenment is itself an obstacle to realizing the Buddha Dharma, it seems we must fight to free ourselves from our own way-seeking minds. We must fight to free ourselves from that actual, you know, desire to find enlightenment. Can we really practice without the desire to practice, is what that's actually saying. Because the desire, again, has to do with our minds and how we use our minds, how we go about living our lives. What he's really saying in that sentence, and, you know, I noticed looking around the room that many of you were taking it in one way, you know, can we really practice without the desire to practice? Can we really practice without making use of our ordinary everyday mind? Can we practice without actually using coming at things from our own self-perspective? The answer is yes. And here's something he says I thought was, I really enjoyed this. He says, when we finally tire of fighting ourselves, all we can really do is just sit. And when I was reflecting on the phrase, fighting ourselves, what arises in our minds, what arises within us is, I want something, as an example. And then we strive to acquire or find or have what we want. That's a struggle right there, certainly has been for me. That's part of what he's meaning by fighting ourselves. Or you can take the flip side again, as I like doing, and that is, you know, examples of there are things in our lives that we don't want or don't like, and so we try to diminish, you know, decrease them, get away from them, and so on. Well, that's a struggle right there again. That's what he's talking about, fighting ourselves. It's within our own minds that things arise that we want, things that we don't want. But it's also arising within our own minds that we feel we need to somehow address that and remedy that. If I'm saying this correctly, it's a self-referential loop. It's all within our own minds. It's all within us. I think this is paraphrasing something I was told by a senior years and years ago. May we all get tired of fighting ourselves quickly. And so when we finally get tired of the fight and, as it were, just put it down as best we can, and I'll use this phrase, but you know, with care and understanding, but when we finally are able to give up. And what's interesting is that the word giving is a positive word. Up is a positive word. Giving up often doesn't have that same positive connotation, but I'm trying to use it in that sense. All we can really do is just sit. So it's clarifying, understanding what just sitting really is, what it means, how to do that. So sitting in meditation without desire, there's a Japanese word for it, shikantaza, which I think most of us who have heard that word over and over again in our order understand that that means just sitting. So the practice that Great Master Dogen described as all things coming and carrying out practice enlightenment through the self, that's just sitting. So the subject of this kind of sitting is no longer me, no longer I. The I, the me, that's a placeholder for the functioning of the orienting ourselves with the acting upon things from the point of view of our everyday minds, from our, you know, our usual minds and so on. So the subject of this sitting is no longer that. The subject, the activity, is no longer just carrying on with our normal everyday, you know, thinking, working minds. The reason for this is because in meditation we let go of all thoughts, all things that arise within the mind, including concepts of me and including the desire for enlightenment. And Shohaku Okamura says, once again to emphasize it, he says, we really just sit. And, you know, in the scripture that we recite called Rules for Meditation, Great Master Dogen is saying we actually even let go of our intention to become a Buddha. Okay, so what he's doing, what's interesting is that if you sort of process what's being said here through just our normal way of thinking about things, our normal way of using our minds and so on, and kind of sort of follow the discussion and so on, we may come out of the end of that with a certain conclusion, a certain understanding. But we can also look at it as he's giving us actual technical advice in how to do this practice, how to do just sitting. And then it's just a matter of continually kind of coming back to that very, very concrete, very clear advice of how to do it. And then he moves into saying, and this again is from Great Master Dogen in one of his works called the Shobogenzo Zui Monkey, which is a compilation of, as I remember, some informal talks that Great Master Dogen gave that were recorded and compiled into book form. So remember, what Dogen says in Rules for Meditation is that we let go of the intention to become Buddha. And then he says in Shobogenzo Zui Monkey, sitting, i.e. just sitting, is the practice of the Buddha. Sitting itself is non-doing. It is nothing but the true form of the self, and self is capital S. Apart from sitting, there is nothing to seek as the Buddha Dharma. Nothing to seek as the truth, because the actual just sitting, and we'll get on to describing that just a little bit more, but it's the actual just sitting which is Buddha. Then he goes on to say later on, he says, do not think that you learn the Buddha Dharma for the sake of some reward for practicing the Buddha way. Part of me almost wants to, in my mind, the way I look at that is just ignore the content. You know, my mind's like kind of jumping out at, okay, what's the definition of that word? What's the definition of that word? But basically, what Dogen there is saying, there's the activity of your normal mind, and he's saying, don't do that. Part of everyday functioning of our mind is, oh, what's my reward if I do this? Just practice the Buddha Dharma, just sit for the sake of the Buddha Dharma, for the sake of just sitting. And here he says, even if you study 1,000 sutras and 10,000 commentaries on them, or even if you have sat meditation until your cushion is worn out, it is impossible to attain the way of the Buddhas and ancestors if this attitude is lacking. So all again, it's like everything that we do, if we come at it from, again, just our normal, usual way of just that activity of our minds, we can do that forever. It's still not going to get you the truth or reality. Just cast your body and mind into the Buddha Dharma. Practice alongside others without holding on to previous views, and you will be in accordance with the way immediately. You know, casting your mind into the Buddha Dharma, one aspect of that is we just allow stuff to come up freely, we allow stuff to pass freely. That's just kind of casting it into the Buddha Dharma. We're not holding on to it. We're not activating it in our usual way. And when we do that, when we just cast off body and mind, cast it into the truth. And to me, I have this image of body and mind just sort of jumping into a big river, just sort of give it to this river, this flowing of life. When we just sit, when we let go of the desire for enlightenment and all other thoughts and emotions, all dharmas carry out practice through the body and mind. This meditation is not my, in quotes, personal attempt to attain something. Rather, as Dogen said, the sitting is actually the Buddha's practice. So I think I've mentioned in the past about, you know, when you sit down for meditation, you know, I talked about, you know, giving yourself to the meditation. And that again is trying to, you know, in my way of understanding it, looking at it and so on, is similar to what's being talked about here, where we just let things arise in our bodies and minds, we let them just pass. We don't try to orient them or gather them or, you know, create some sort of structure. You know, a rock in a river is basically creating a structure within this smooth, free-flowing liquid. Reverend Master Jiyu would often talk about meditation is taking your hand, your open hand, and putting it in the water of a stream or a river. And at some point, there's no separation, no division between the hand and the river. It's just the river. And what we do, what over and over again arises in meditation, in the process of doing it, is somehow the hand has closed onto something. And it's trying to kind of pull something out of the water and saying, look, here's an actual object. Here's an actual thing that's going on, which is kind of funny, because in this undifferentiated, clear liquid of water, it's like, huh? There aren't things, there aren't discrete entities in this stream or this river. And this is what, you know, Shohaku Okamura is referring to his, I think it's his, what, grandmaster, as in grandmaster like grandparent, who talked about using the phrase, you know, opening the hand of thought. What arises is something we're holding on to in our mind. Just open it up again. Open your hand up. Let it go. Let it come and go. And although oftentimes we keep referring to thinking, it applies equally to emotions and feelings. So there was the second part of that opening teaching that I read. The great Master Dogen said, he said, when the Dharma is correctly transmitted to the self, the person is immediately an original person. There's the commentary in, it's one of the last two precepts. I always keep forgetting which one it is, but it says, to do something by ourselves without copying others is the source of all wisdom. This in part is what this phrase is saying, is that when the Dharma, when the truth is correctly transmitted to the self, i.e. when the self, our body and mind, is simply permeated by that truth, by that reality, the person is immediately an original person. And, you know, some of you may be familiar with, there's the koan that says, what was your original face before your parents were born? The phrase original face is the same as this phrase, the original person. It's actually, you know, we can use other terms to say it's finding your true self, finding your original self. You find that when you're, you know, again, kind of from the perspective of the self, when you get saturated by that truth, when that, you know, as it says in Adoration of the Buddha's Relics, it says, the truth enters into us and we enter into the truth. It's that same thing again. So original person is a translation of a Japanese word, which is actually referring to the self living within the network of interdependent origination, which is a very, quite a mouthful, but it's basically the self living in the network of interdependent origination basically means the self that realizes it's not a self, but that it's actually, there's simply the entire universe, the unbounded universe. It refers to, an original person refers to a person who is one with the original source that exists before karmic conditioning. Karmic conditioning, again, is speaking to just the normal functioning of our minds. It functions the way it does, the things come up that do because of our karmic conditioning, which is unique for each one of us. This original person is actualized when we sit in meditation and let go of thinking, and let go of emotions, and let go of physical sensations. Thoughts well up even when we let go, but we just keep releasing them without grasping. In meditation, we neither negate nor affirm anything. We don't control the mind, we just sit. And that I think is an important thing to remember too. We don't control the mind. Just sitting, it's not quite the right analogy, but it's sort of, there's an anchoring, a stillness where we just simply allow stuff to come and go. You know, I keep thinking of like kelp fronds on the bottom of you know, the ocean, that just kind of back and forth, but that's even too concrete. There isn't anything going back and forth. There's just going back and forth, things coming up, things passing. But the transition that happens is that things coming and going are happening within the totality of the universe, the totality of reality. That becomes the source, or that is the source. And at some point, just the things that arise in the body and mind are no longer something we hold on to. They're no longer something we identify with in a self-centered way. So we don't control the mind. We just sit. We really do nothing. We just keep sitting upright and waking up and breathing naturally. This is why Great Master Dogen says, meditation is non-doing. In other words, I do nothing. Sitting is no longer my action anymore. The entire universe is sitting, using this body and mind. That's all. In so doing, we put our entire being on the ground of interdependent origination, on the ground of impermanence and lack of independent existence that is the original source. We put our entire being, by just sitting, we're putting our entire being on the ground of reality. But again, we really do nothing. Because actually we don't have to. And when I say really, we really do nothing, we're saying it that way because of the rules of grammar and communication. But there's just doing nothing. There isn't a we or a you or a me who's doing nothing. That again is back into our usual use of the mind again. So again, it's, to my mind, it's Great Master Dogen taking another facet, another way that our minds can look at things, can try to understand things, and in understanding things, think, that's okay, that's the way I need to do my practice, that's how I need to do the meditation. And again, he's trying to take us through the steps to show us that just keep letting go of those things. Okay, your aspiration to practice got you here, got you in the door. But to progress beyond getting into the door, to actually find the reality that Buddhism promises us we will find, then it's okay, check your aspirations at the door. Not needed anymore. And I think that for each and every one of us, as he put it, as we continue to awaken, as we continue to see the myriad things that come up in our own bodies and minds in their unique ways, we keep realizing how we can find liberation within that. Just let it come up. How nice. Just let it go. And that's the activity of Buddha. That's the entire universe sitting and actualizing itself. So I think that's a reasonably okay place to stop. And again, if there are any questions, any comments, anything anyone wants to bring up,